Mini episode 829 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 829 and a joint edition with the FDH Lounge and Sportsology Radio. That means, of course, I have my good friend, Sportsology proprietor and FDH Lounge signatory, Russ Cohen, on the line with me today to break down the 2017 NFL Draft. And this is going to be interesting and a little bit different for you, Russ. We haven't had you on our NFL Draft coverage previously. My fellow original signatories, Jason Jones and Chris Galloway, and I have done this in the past, and good to have you on this year. You bring a lot of experience covering, of course, the NHL Draft every year, and you're a strong observer of the NFL Draft as well, and we'll be based in the metro area with the draft in Philadelphia this week.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, the only one I went to live was in 2000, and that was interesting. The Jets picked Chad Pennington that year. I think they could have picked Tom Brady. There was somebody in the Jets room that wanted Tom Brady, apparently, but nobody listened to him. But that's typical. But what I do learn about drafts every year is by being on the draft floor now is just getting little stories. We have a lot of directors of amateur scouting on our Hockey Prospect radio show. I chat with a lot of these guys now and some GMs occasionally. And so I do find out more and more. And usually when I find out information about the draft, it's like two or three drafts later. A couple years later, they're willing to divulge a nugget here and a nugget there. So it sort of helps. But this year, I feel like as a Jet fan that I have to be a little proactive because it's a huge draft for them. It really could set the course of the franchise for the next couple years.
Yeah, your franchise is in a very interesting position. The Browns and the Jets are going to be very, very central to this thing here. You mentioned in passing, give it a plug, because I love listening to it. My dad has Sirius XM in his car, and whenever he and I are traveling on the weekends, I always try to listen to the Sirius XM Hockey Prospect show that you do every week.
Yeah, thanks. It's Hockey Prospect Radio on Sirius XM. It airs every Saturday, Sunday. On Sirius, it's usually on Saturdays 8 to 10. Sundays, it's usually – actually, Saturdays 7 to 9, Sundays 8 to 10 – but it's also on the TSN network, and people can pick it up on podcast on tsn.ca. Just go on there, and you'll see type in Hockey Prospect Radio. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
Excellent. Looking forward to getting your thoughts here, your reactions to what we're getting from our other guys who are doing the deep dive. And I see we have one of the first of our two on the line here, my good friend, fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, joining us to talk NFL draft as always. Chris, I know this is a big passion of yours year in and year out. I know you have some very strong thoughts with our Cleveland Browns on the clock at number one as we speak. This is going to be a big year for the future of this franchise, to be sure.
Rick, thanks for having me. I love doing this episode with you every year. I have to agree with Sashi Brown when he says that the ability to remake the Cleveland Browns this year is substantial. And I think a lot of what we're going to talk about today revolves around the fact that I think this first round is going to be very interesting for mostly in large part because of the Browns and some of the teams at the top, because of the condition of their rosters, you know, be it the Jets, be it the Browns, be it the 49ers, they're all looking to move down and acquire more picks. And so I think there's the potential. Now the question of course is always whether they can get dance partners. But I think there's a potential in this draft, because of its depth, for a lot of movement in that first 20 picks in the draft. I do have some strong feelings about number one with Cleveland. I know there's a lot of talk about quarterback, and there's a lot of talk about Myles Garrett. I'm not sold on Garrett. I'm probably in the 1% that's not. I view him as Jadeveon Clowney, part two. And I don't think that Jadeveon is proving to be a franchise-changing player. And I wonder if to do it all over again, whether or not the Texans would make that pick. I think the Browns, I think a lot of the talk that you're hearing right now is as it relates to the Browns and are they conflicted? I don't think they're conflicted. I think the Browns have 7 or 8 scenarios on their board that they are trying to let play out. And a lot of that involves, you know, either taking Garrett at number one, you know, trading down a few slots with somebody and picking up more picks and, you know, and taking a safety like Jamal Adams or something to that effect. You know, possibly trading the 12th pick for a quarterback. There's a lot of scenarios and a lot of things that are going to start to play out in the next few days as we move into Thursday. And I think the talk that you hear about the Browns are conflicted, and there's a lot of national media ridicule of the Browns saying, well, you know, how can they get this wrong? I believe the smokescreen talks about Trubisky at number one have been for an – I think, A, they're a smokescreen, and I believe they're a leak that has an audience of one, and that's Bill Belichick. And as we get closer to Thursday, I think the Browns are trying to – I think their number one scenario that they are trying to actuate is getting Garoppolo at a reasonable price. Their other two options, and my guess is, based on analytics, they have Watson and Trubisky very closely rated on their board. They could probably live with either one of them, but they want one of them or Garoppolo. So they're playing out a number of scenarios in terms of how they can get one of these, you know, in their preference to play out. And that's why all the leaks, I don't think there is division. I think they're playing all the cards, playing all the angles, and trying to, you know, get one of these scenarios that they have lined up to fall into place for them.
It's a lot to take in. The one thing I'll say is, so Chris, you don't think Trubisky will be there at 6? Is that what I'm gleaning from that?
No, I think Trubisky will be there at 6.
Okay. Yep. All right, so if you do think he's going to be there at 6, because I wasn't sure based on the way you were sort of framing it. So here's the way I feel as a Jet fan, and then I'll sort of look at it from other eyes. But as a Jet fan, it's stupid if they take a running back because they don't have an offensive line. So, like, why would you even bother taking a running back? Their offensive line is so askew right now. It would take a couple of years for a guy to have an impact. I would even say don't take a tight end. Because if you take a tight end, again, you have Josh McCown thrown to that tight end. Like, what's the point? It's going to take 2 or 3 years for this tight end to really fit in there. But they do need a quarterback, even though they'll probably have 4 or 5 in camp because that's what McCagnan seems to do now because he can't admit that Christian Hackenberg's a mistake and just cut bait. And for some reason, they only look at Petty as a backup. That's fine. So I look at Trubisky and I say, you know what? I actually watched him breaking down film, and I feel like he's actually probably smarter than even Petty. And I thought that he could read defenses, which is sometimes a problem, as you know. And he looks the part. He's got a strong arm. He's certainly smarter than Kellen Clemens. I mean, I could tell you that. I don't think that takes a lot. But Kellen Clemens used to have a great arm, but, boy, was he, you know, not that intelligent on the field. And so at the end of the day, if I'm the Jets, I don't see how they could pass it up. If McCagnan trades down and doesn't take this kid and he turns into something, they're going to have a problem because the Jets have not been able to identify quarterbacks in other rounds. Like, the only time they've ever gotten a decent quarterback is in the first round.
Well, and I will tell you this. I think that I agree with everything you just said. As it relates to the Jets, I don't know how they pass on Trubisky if he's there. I think if somehow the Jets did, the next team prior to Cleveland at 12 that would I think be in the market for Trubisky would be Buffalo at 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're Cleveland and you cannot land Trubisky, or rather Garoppolo, in a reasonable trade with the Patriots by draft time, you're going to have to figure out. And they've had discussions. I think the Browns have had discussions with Tennessee at 5. And I think that's one of those scenarios in play. We move up from 12 to 5 to get Trubisky before the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
mm-hmm.
in play. Don't forget, that's what San Francisco's playing. They're playing that game with the Jets. You want Trubisky? Well, maybe you need to move up to 2. So this situation, unlike in years past, I think it's very, very fluid. And Rick would tell you, Rick and I have a disagreement. Rick has Deshaun Watson number 1 and Trubisky 2. I have it the other way around. I believe Trubisky is the better long-term prospect in the NFL. I watched the kid in high school. I watched his Carolina career. Some of the criticisms that have come out about him from some of these guys like Charlie Casserly, you know, questioning his leadership. If you pay attention to Carolina, you know that team loves him. His teammates loved him. Leadership is not an issue. He's smart. He's got great footwork. He's got an arm. You know, my biggest issue is not 13 games played, because I know the Arizona coaching staff called that into question. You know, how can you draft a kid who's only started 13 games? Why couldn't he win the starting job? Well, he couldn't win the starting job because Larry Fedora is an idiot. There were plenty of people around the Carolina program in his sophomore year that were saying Mitch should be the starter, not Williams. And Mitch played a lot as a sophomore. He just didn't start. And it was pretty evident to a lot of people that Mitch was the better quarterback. But for whatever reason, whether it was team politics, you know, recruiting politics, I don't know, Fedora would not make that move in his sophomore year and give Mitch the reins. I don't think that shows anything about Mitch's inability to compete or to lead. I think he's the best quarterback in this draft. And I think, you know, he's going to take a couple of years, and he's going to need the right situation around him, good coaches. But I think he has a very high ceiling. That said, I think, again, it's for the Browns, it's scenarios. That's where the analytics come in. I think they prefer Garoppolo in his experience. I think they have him rated high. I think they prefer to get him. I think the coaches would prefer to get him because you can plug him in now. He understands defenses. He reads defenses. He understands NFL game planning. He's ready to go. He's plug and play now. And so I think they would prefer to go that route. And I think their backup is either preferably Trubisky, if they can find a way to get him, or they sit tight and they get him. They get Watson at 12. I think these are some of the scenarios they're looking at, and some of it is just, you know, it's not all in their control how it all plays out.
The other scenario is the Jets could trade Sheldon Richardson if they had to or wanted to sort of move up to get Trubisky, because someone would take Sheldon Richardson, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely. I think there's no question about that. In looking at the mock drafts here, and by the way, anybody who's able to listen to this show will also be able to read our draft guide, as those are going up at about the same time today. Pro Football Draftology 2017, always jointly produced by Sportsology, the FPH Lounge, FantasyDraftHelp.com. Again, Russ being the guy who is the key mover on the hockey coverage every year. We're going to have the hockey one coming out in June. Myself and especially Jason Jones are the lead analysts on the NFL and NBA ones. We've got our mock drafts in here. I noticed that Jason actually has Trubisky slipping to 12 to the Browns. I have the Jets taking him at 6. I don't think he's going to get past the Jets if it comes to that. So that's the one thing. I will tell you this, Chris. Both of us have the Deshaun Watson. This is my pessimistic view. I have the Browns passing on him at 12 because, of course, they'll do that. This is what I come to expect year in and year out. They'll pass on him. Both of us have him going to Houston at 25, who I think will hungrily snatch up Deshaun Watson and rebuild their quarterback situation there. This thing here, I have to ask you, Chris, because, I mean, I have literally never, ever heard this before. The latest knock on Watson is miles per hour, 49 miles per hour, nobody under 55. I've literally never heard this as a metric before. This just sounds like something to smear somebody here, some kind of made-up kind of a thing here. As was pointed out, Tom Brady wasn't subjected to this when he came into the NFL. Peyton Manning, guys who built their arm strength up at the NFL level, this is before all the smart marks out there decided to get their radar guns. I've seen with my own eyes Deshaun Watson make long throws successfully. So it's one of these things of what do you believe, this number or your lying eyes? So what do you make of this, Chris, as the latest part of the whole thing of, let's nitpick Deshaun Watson?
Well, I don't think it was directed at Deshaun Watson. I think it's another metric and another tool that people are latching onto to try to, you know, every year this seems like there's a new thing, and this thing sort of, the first time I heard about it was last year, but it seems to me that they're always looking for these new metrics to be able to explain draft picks and why someone's a bust or not a bust. I'm with you. It's not certainly something that I would concern myself with. I mean, I think, A, far more than anything, the best indicator is looking at, accuracy. How accurate a throw are you? What's your completion percentage? I mean, those things are far more important than that extra 1 mile an hour on the gun. Now, that said, you know, being able to put zip on the ball is important because you have such tight windows in the NFL versus college.
Sure.
So it's something that should be in the mix for any scout looking at it. But the other thing I've heard is that, you know, that gun at the draft, you know, at the combine is extremely unreliable. And so I'm sure teams are looking at these things individually. That, you know, they're scouring 3 years of tape on Watson. I don't think, you know, he can make the throws. I don't think that's really in question at all.
Right, right. I don't think anybody should be questioning that. Now, Russ, I got to ask you, primarily from the hockey standpoint, but also I know you've done a decent amount of covering baseball prospects. So you're a guy that's used to looking at things through scouting eyes from doing the prospects show, talking to personnel people. What are you finding, not just necessarily in football, although if you know anything in football, spit it out, but anything, you know, as far as the way that we're continuing to develop these new tools for looking at prospects in sports here in the year 2017?
Well, the miles per hour thing did make me chuckle, but I was watching ESPN earlier, and they were talking about it. But then when you see some video, you're like, you know, some of those throws aren't that hard. Like, the eye test to me is always important, and I'm not a huge analytics guy, but like Chris said, there's always a point where some metrics definitely are good to look at and are a part of the equation. And even in hockey and in other sports, they're a part of an equation. But sometimes you have to look at the eye test. And so I did see a few on the eye test that maybe they weren't 49 miles per hour, but they didn't have the zip like Chris talked about. And so you do worry about that a little bit. Other things, look, a fast guy is a fast guy. A fast skater is a fast skater. Still doesn't mean they could score. Still doesn't mean they could take it to the house. That's always something where speed is nice, but there have been plenty of guys like Johnny Lamb Jones comes to mind. None were faster, and he really couldn't catch the ball. And, you know, and Ronaldo Nehemiah is another one who learned how to catch the ball a little bit. So, you know, it's like, do you want the sumo wrestler in net for hockey? It's the same thing. So you look at those things, and I think the biggest thing that you take out of, and I go to the NHL Combine every year, is the strength factor is always good. The jumping ability is always good in hockey it's for speed burst when running, and also, you know, for football it's going to be the same thing for speed for running. Definitely helps. So some of those tests are good. The rest, you're better off just interviewing the guy and seeing what he's like and writing a profile, because other than what you saw during the year, a lot of the other stuff's not going to help you all that much. Now, the teams do all kinds of testing. They take them into a room. They do all these interviews. They do the Wunderlich test in the NFL. Those things do matter, and we're never privy to those. And so that's the hidden part of it. But I did want to bring up the psychology of the draft, too, because you would think fan bases would learn their lesson. Like, I'm going to bring up the Eagles fan base. What's going on around town here is they want a running back. But for them to get a running back, or Doug Peterson to get a running back, would be like your grandmother driving that Oldsmobile that's sitting in the driveway that's got 20,000 miles on it, the 1980-something Oldsmobile, maybe 1990s.
Uh-huh.
She just doesn't use it. Doug Peterson is not going to use a running back. And so if you're drafting a running back, you're drafting him for the next coach. Like, that's – and so that, to me, is sort of like a waste. But also, it goes a little deeper than that. The last time the Eagles fan base wanted a running back, they booed the quarterback that got taken, and the running back was Ricky Williams, and he was okay as an NFLer, and, you know, Donovan McNabb's the best quarterback they've ever had, or at least their second best, depending on how far back you want to go. So – fans should learn a little something from that. They should.
True, true, yeah. Everybody should be a little bit more humble as far as how they look at this. Now, looking, Chris, at the big picture structure of the draft, I had heard Chris Landry, NFL draft analyst, who was often on Fox Sports Radio, NBC Sports Radio, I believe. I heard him on one of these shows saying he thought that from about 5 to 25, somewhere in there, that they were fairly interchangeable. I look at it a little bit differently. You've got Garrett as the consensus number one. You got a number of guys there in that next group, but I don't think it's necessarily that big. You got the two defensive backs from Ohio State, Lattimore and Hooker. You got the defensive back and safety from LSU, Jamal Adams. You got your guy, Jonathan Allen, the defensive lineman from Alabama. Mike Williams, wide receiver, Clemson, probably in that group. Handful of other guys potentially in there. And then I think from about 10 to about 30, somewhere in there, maybe 35, because you're looking at some guys that are not consensus first-rounders, maybe even 40, because there tends to be variance when you get into the 20s about who's even going to go in the first round. To me, that's the structure of it. You've got those three tiers there, and there's going to be some blurriness, I think, between second tier and third tier as far as how guys have them slotted on their boards. In looking at the consensus number one, we touched on this before with Myles Garrett. This is a situation. People are comparing it to Jadeveon Clowney. You're right about that. When he was the consensus number one the year that he came out. Now, again, this past year, in the absence of J.J. Watt and him being healthy, he actually had a very good year, really started to kind of live up to the billing. But you're hoping in that spot, if you're taking that guy, you're hoping it's that generational player. I'll say probably Bruce Smith for the best point of comparison. That's the kind of edge rush you're looking for if you're taking that guy number one. And there are some bad memories in this town of the last time that happened. Courtney Brown in 2000, the Quiet Storm, the most devastating nickname that's ever been bestowed upon a prospect, I would say, for the kind of career that he had. So in looking at this, Chris, I'm like you. I don't have all the reservations that you do. Your point is well taken about how he put up his numbers against the caliber of opposition and against good SEC teams. You're right about that part of it. I look at it like Greg Williams, I trust him. Somehow or another, Jimmy Haslam managed to lure him to work for him somehow. Greg Williams, I think, is one of the best defensive minds in the league. They're not making this move unless Greg Williams says, I can make that guy a multi-time Pro Bowl player, unless he gets the gleam in his eye looking at him play the game. So I look at that. I look at the fact that, again, I don't think the Browns have the gravitas to pass on him. You look at their draft last year, it would be a probably big overstatement to say brimming with solidity in what they did last year, because it's pretty underwhelming 1 year in. So to say they're smarter than everybody else, the rest of the world says he's the consensus number one guy, but they beg to differ, heads are going to roll, and probably justifiably so, if you pass on him and he becomes Bruce Smith. So I'm with you somewhat on that, Chris, but I'm not all the way with you on that, because I'm more comfortable with them taking him than them trading down to take somebody else where there are a little bit more in the way of questions about what they can deliver.
Listen, I get it, and I believe they will take Garrett, because you talk about the gravitas. You know, if the Patriots were sitting at one, they're that team that can go, you know, and everyone goes, oh, they're so brilliant. Browns, they,
precisely.
You know, I agree. They will be eviscerated if they don't take Garrett. But what I'm here to tell you, though, to tell you about how fans need to chill, which is, again, we don't know, and this is said every year, and somehow it always gets forgotten, we don't know how a draft pick is going to work out for until 3-4 years down the road. I don't think Garrett when I watch Garrett and I go back and I look at game tape and I look at some of these games we played in, I see a guy that just disappeared a lot. You know, whether it was against SEC competition or in a bowl game or – you know, he'd show up for a couple of plays, and then you don't see him for a while. And that, to me, is always just a red flag. I didn't see that with Von Miller. You know, you didn't see that with a guy like Bruce Smith, although admittedly I didn't see a lot of Bruce Smith college tape. But there are certain guys, you know, that when you're taking them number one, show me the game that Myles Garrett just completely dominated at and took over college competition. There isn't one. And so I get that he has all the measurables, the speed, the size, the, you know, he's elusive, he can rush the passer. I mean, at times he's done that, but then he disappears for huge stretches. And so I just, could he be great? Yes, he could. But I also think that there's a high probability that he's going to be just, you know, okay. And look, if the Browns take him, they get the public off their back. They're not going to be criticized. For them, it is a safe pick. You know, the beneficiary of Myles Garrett, more than anything, and I agree with you about Williams, best hire the Browns have made in a long time to finally get a defensive coordinator that gets it. And then B, so Garrett fits his system a lot in the same way a guy like Jabril Peppers, you know, potentially at number 33, really fits Greg Williams' system. And so you know, if all they want to do for Garrett is just unleash him and he, you know, you're not asking him to stop the run, you know, you're just unleashing him, you know, relentlessly on the quarterback off the edge every play, nonstop. The big benefactor of that is going to be Ogba, who had a very solid rookie season, and now you're taking some of that pressure off of him. I could see him, Garrett, having the biggest impact on Ogba. Really think that could work well for the Browns. And look, you get Garrett, you've got Ogba, you've got Dez Bryant coming back, you've got Danny Shelton. That's a pretty damn good front line. And then you've got, you know, Kirksey and Collins at the linebacker positions. If they can get a safety like a Peppers at 33, this defense takes a huge step forward, I think, especially with Greg Williams' scheme. So one, I guess my message is fans got to chill, because if some reason they do trade out of there because they got the mother load to go from 1 to 4, you know, don't sweat it so much, because I'm going to, you know, coming back to your talk about this draft, I keep going through this, all these players, and I think this is the deepest draft in a long, 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 long time. And I mean, even though your offensive line is pretty thin, that aside, I think, and, you know, there's not the high-profile quarterback, you know, like an Andrew Luck sitting at the top. I think in terms of depth, I think we're going to look back 10 years from now and say, wow, 2017, look at the future players that this, you know, those first 4 or 5 rounds that teams hauled in, guys that are going to play a long time. I think there's a lot of talent. And to your point about how there's tiers, I agree with you in general. But I think in this year, more than some years past, there is a lot more blur between 1 and 2 tier and the 2 and 3, and even like 1 and 3. I think there's some guys that you're going to get in the 3rd round that are going to be Pro Bowlers really quick. I think this is a deep draft, and I don't, you know, I think it sets up well for a team like the Browns, even though it's not the ideal quarterback. It sets up well for them with all the picks they've amassed to be able to really stock the roster with some quality players.
Rick, I got to ask you something. I was going to ask you something as a Browns fan. So,
sure.
Is the first overall pick, is he as good as Mario Williams? Because the Texans took a beating taking Mario Williams, because you used the words, or Chris used the words, safe pick. Now, he's a pretty good player.
Right.
He had a pretty nice career. But there were players that were better after him. If they take the safe pick and players turn up better after him, then what will the public trust be like? I had to ask that.
Well, it's going to be ugly if that's the case. I have to say, I remember that draft fondly, because back in the days of the late lamented Sports Talk Network, Jason Jones and I were anchoring the coverage. We did, I think, 10 and a half hours. We went on, that was when they were still doing the draft on Saturdays. I think it was like 9 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. with a handful of breaks in there. And listen, we were among the ones who eviscerated Charlie Casserly for that. And I had Charlie Casserly on the show some years later, and I said to him, my bad. And he was a lot more gracious about it than I would have been. So, but that's the thing. That's the classic conundrum when you're in a situation like this. And again, this Browns regime has a lot to prove at this point here. Chris and I have talked a lot about this. My sense is, I know Chris thinks sometimes I'm hanging them for past regimes. I'm not, but I'm wary of signs of things I've seen before. I think that's a safe way to put it. If you don't see things that remind you of problems with past regimes, I think, you know, that's one kind of way to look at it. And so they have a lot to prove at this point in time here. Well, as Chris said, you know, not necessarily carrying the burden of what past regimes did, but having to earn their spurs, so to speak. But how do you see that shaking out, Chris?
Well, I think here's the problem for the Browns, and it happens with local fans and it happens with national media, which is the narrative that the Browns can never get it right. These guys blow it year after year after year after year, which, of course, the answer to that is it's not these guys, quote-unquote. It's the equivalent of there being a house at 74 Main Street, and you live next door to that house. And so a new family moves in, and you walk over and go, hey, you remember a couple of years ago when you came out in the front lawn, you shot your dog, and the new guy, the guy at 74 Main Street goes, yeah, I didn't do that. No, you remember that time your shed caught on fire? You know, you're a real idiot. You know, you ought to fix the roof like I told you 5 years ago. Hey, man, I just moved in here 11 months ago. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Yeah, yeah, everyone that lives in 74 Main Street is an idiot. So that's the problem that the current Browns regime has, is that they are being hung for all the past people that lived in that house, and they're like, and unfortunately, they have to live with that until they are able to prove that they're not all the other idiots that used to live in that house. And so it's a really unfair thing for these guys. I mean, but it's just the reality that we live in. I think for the most part, I do think that this current regime, I hate that word, is doing a very good job of trying to ignore a lot of that and sticking to things like their process and their analytics and sticking to what they believe they need to be doing to build this team correctly. Past regimes knee-jerk reacted, trying to make up for the sins of the past, and then they just compounded it. So the one thing I do like that I sort of disagree with Rick on is that I think they're doing a better job of trying to stick to their plan and not deviating less from it, which is why I think for the Browns, this draft is a very fluid process. So when you hear these reports that the Browns are conflicted, the Browns don't know what they're doing, they have scenarios. But they and the rest of us don't know how the chips are going to start to fall in place until things get rolling.
Chris, the one thing I'll back you up on is one of my prime criticisms of the Browns year in and year out is that they, and this comes from my perspective now of over a decade of doing the draft analysis and preparing these draft guides. Every year I'm putting together a list of team needs for the draft guide, and I look at it, and the Browns never exit the off season with less team needs than they had going in. Oftentimes, they'll cut somebody and then draft somebody in the first round to fill their spot. I think that was I don't know if that was the year Jabal Sheard left, and I think they drafted Barkevious Mingo. That was like a classic example of that. In free agency this year, they filled holes. They filled holes on the offensive line primarily, but they went out and they got guys in different spots here to fill holes. And there is the very good chance when you look at this draft, they will exit this offseason with less holes than they had coming in, which will be the first time in a long time for something like that. So as we're getting here more towards the home stretch of the show, I'm going to throw out a couple things. I'm going to start with you, Chris. Respond to any of these here. They're kind of catching you. This is a thing, when I look at this draft thematically, this is one of the things that jumps out to me, is that this is the first time in a long time where we've seen the downgrading of running backs in the first round. We're seeing a re-emphasis on them this year with this crop. Leonard Fournette, a lot of people comparing to Adrian Peterson, I think for very good cause. He's one of these guys like Elliott, I think, that represents, and Todd Gurley, that represents the return of the bell cow to the NFL, which we really haven't had very much. You've got also Dalvin Cook, who is not so much a huge back like that, but a good-sized solid back, but still pretty explosive. And then Christian McCaffrey, who fits more in sort of the Reggie Bush mold. All three of those guys look like they're going to go relatively high in the first round. You've got that scenario there. You've got John Ross at wide receiver, who broke the combine speed record there with running a 40, heading up in the eyes of many, a very good crop of wide receivers this year. And you've got a depth situation here where, just to put things in proper perspective, I agree with you on this, Chris, when you look at this here. In my mock draft, something that I thought was really interesting, I had Taco Charlton going 31 to Atlanta. I mean, think about that young, developing defense that they have there and adding a guy like that. I mean, if he goes in the teens, it wouldn't surprise you. But he could drop to 31 just based on what's happening with the other guys out there. And the other thing I want to throw out as well here, too, we have a little bit of a disagreement in the FBH Lounge family here. My good friends Anthony Petrone and Tom Denk are on opposite sides of this big controversy. Anthony has been a big proponent, you mentioned him, Chris, of Jabril Peppers. I am as well. I look at that guy, I think he's part of the future of the league, where the positions get a little bit more amorphous and he can play different positions in different formations. Tom Denk thinks he's going to be a bust, doesn't think that he's going to be able to play safety, and that even if he does, he's going to be a strong safety and therefore overdrafted with wherever he goes. So I agree with you, Chris, on the Peppers thing. I think he would be good here. But take any of those points there and run with it, Chris.
All right, here's what I'm going to tell you. I think Peppers is exactly, like I said before, a Greg Williams safety. He's physical. I think he's going to be, he can do some coverage for you. I think he's mostly going to be a strong safety. who can play in the box. And I think that that's exactly, he can roam around and play in different spots around the field. That's a guy that Greg Williams really likes. So watch for him at 33 if he's there, the Browns to snatch him up. I think you talk about the running back. Yeah, I think some of the running back talk right now about the resurgence is just because of how much depth there is in the position in this draft this year, running back. I'm not a Dalvin Cook fan. I think he fumbles way too much. And in the NFL, that's the quickest way to end up on the bench. Yep. Coaches just not tolerate that. McCaffrey, I love. I just absolutely love. And that's a guy I could see going anywhere from, you know, honestly, anywhere in the top 10 all the way. And he's going to go somewhere in the first round. I don't know where. He's a guy that could just go anywhere. I mean, don't be stunned if the Browns did something crazy and traded down a little bit and grabbed him. You know, if the Browns went and grabbed him, you know, you've got this situation where Crowell hasn't signed his tender. You know, that situation doesn't look to be improving. McCaffrey's a guy that you can put out, you can throw the ball to. He runs hard between the tackles. He is so versatile. Teams have to look at him when they're looking at running back. You know, you talked about wide receivers. You know, I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of John Ross. He's so fast. He's so fast, but he's so small. The speed guys, the Percy Harvins, the Corey Coleman's, I get so, you know, I'm not all that interested in, you know. I hope this year Corey Coleman sort of, you know, breaks out and can be that really great field stretching number two. I still don't think he's a number one. I'm a big fan of Corey Davis in this draft. I think the Western Michigan wide receiver is a lot like Antonio Brown. I think he is a guy that's going to be a 10-year just dominant wide receiver. Somebody's got to get him, and they got to be smart and grab him, I think, earlier than what a lot of projections have him going as. To speak to depth, even wide receiver, you know, our own alma mater, Ohio, guy that no one talks about, Sebastian Smith, he's a poor man's Corey Davis. You know, similar numbers. I watched him dominate Tennessee's cornerbacks this year in that game.
Right.
Smith ate them up. Smith is a guy that people are talking about as a undrafted free agent, maybe sixth round. I think if you want a big, physical, fast guy with great hands, there's another value. Again, speaking to depth, a guy like Sebastian Smith, you know, in the sixth round, who could be a starter for you within a year, is exactly the kind of, you know, of what's going to be available in this draft.
You're damn right, Chris. You can never go wrong with taking a Bobcat. I co-sign on that point right there. When we're talking about receivers also, too, I would be remiss if I didn't point out a rare draft in that you have two tight ends who look like they're definitely first-round worthy. O.J. Howard is going to go somewhere in the top 16. I actually have him going 12 in my mock draft to the Browns. David Njoku from Miami, I actually have him going 30 to the Steelers. He would fit in very well there. So there are some really interesting talents. And the thing we were talking about there with John Ross, when Jason and I were doing our post-combine show, I made the draft there, mm-hmm. that I grew up as a kid watching the show Dallas, and I thought that John Ross was going to be the future of Ewing Oil. Now it turns out he's going to be the future of the NFL. This whole thing about getting caught up in the speed gun and the guy going out there and running the fastest time ever, a really interesting aspect, along with all these other ones to this year's draft here. You've got a lot of different things that are going to be playing out this week for you in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I just, you know, I look at football players and I want a playmaker. If he's a little slower, it's fine. Like, nobody really slow makes it in the NFL anyhow. So what you're talking about is just like a little extra on the gun. How often does that little extra on the gun make somebody unstoppable in the NFL? Like, almost nobody is unstoppable in the NFL. So I always look at it and say, I want a playmaker. I'm a little worried. I found couple things that worried me for this draft. And these aren't the, you know, usual police blotter things, but they're just like little warning signs. So, like, Leonard Fournette showed up to an LSU spring game yesterday with $1,300 purple Christian Louboutins on. I don't even know who Christian Louboutin is, but all I know is this kid's coming out of college.
He's a very famous He makes women's shoes, and it's Christian Louboutin.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't those women's pumps? I remember a character from Breaking Bad wearing those, Lydia.
Okay.
So what was he wearing them for?
Because he could.
Louboutin does make men's shoes, and most of them are ugly, like the ones Leonard
They're very
wearing.
Ugly. They're very ugly.
Okay.
The question is, where does he get the money for that? Yeah.
Well, he got it from his agent. He got forward. Now that he's pro, his agent said, here's 100 G's to get you through the first contract to pay
you. Right. So that's always a worry sign when guys are spending money on that. That's just one thing. Now, Reuben Foster is basically taking us all, like, treating us all like we're idiots. Because here's the quote he gave for coming up with a diluted sample at the combine. He goes, well, he was throwing up and he had diarrhea and he couldn't keep anything down and was cramping, and an advisor offered to have a doctor put him on IVs to hydrate, but he didn't want to do that, so he saw a doctor and got some medication and started hydrating himself. No, nobody is going to tell a guy who's going to make millions of dollars, yeah, you could hydrate yourself, and don't worry, just take this medication. We don't even know what it is. He's already into the NFL substance abuse program. He's not even been drafted yet.
I love Foster as a player. He is a beast. I mean, I love him on the Browns. I mean, I think any team, you want a guy that makes plays, can runs that defense from that inside linebacker spot. He is fantastic. But I'm with you. I mean, in some ways, this will get easier, I think, in the next collective bargaining when they just take testing for weed off the table together. And I think that's going to happen. And all these guys are smoking it, and they're all trying to hide it, and they're all trying to mask it. And I think it'll go away.
But then don't lie about it. Just say you smoked weed.
Yeah, well, and again, he's going to cost himself a lot of money.
He's already cost himself money, right? Don't lie on a quote.
That's the idiot factor where it's like, don't – and he'd be off – even how much I love him as a player, he'd be off my board because, you know, as a Browns fan, it's back to the Josh Gordon thing. It's like,
right,
you can't stop smoking weed for a few months just so you can make millions of dollars.
Right.
How big an idiot are you? And so I'm with you on that completely. The guy is an immense talent, but clearly, you know, putting for brains.
Well, exactly. And I talked about O.J. Howard, the rare tight end who is worthy of going in the top half of the first round. Same thing with Foster. You don't tend to see that with inside/middle linebackers who go in that spot there. But you have one of them come out every so often, a number of years, Patrick Willis was another one of them, and you look at the career that he had. And, you know, he basically fits that mold physically as far as what he can do, and it's definitely on the field justified if he goes there. Off the field, maybe not so much. But this ended up being a tremendous breakdown today. We ended up having a scheduling snafu, unfortunately, with our Jason Jones, but a great panel. This is one that I certainly want to put together subsequently. My fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, who is an annual staple of our draft coverage, and good friend, FDH Lounge dignitary and Sportsology proprietor, Russ Cohen, joining us for the first time this year to break down NFL draft. Very well done, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being a part of this great show today.
Hey, Rick, before we go, I'm going to make one prediction. The Browns will trade for Garoppolo.
Okay.
I'll cross my fingers and hope for the best on that one. I'm not a big proponent, but I'll hope it goes well. But closing thoughts, Russ?
My closing thought is Mike Maccagnan took over the New York Jets, and he basically took them over to make them a great team. When things didn't work out, he then said they were rebuilding. I kind of question what he's been able to do in the draft. And so this is a big draft. This is going to make or break this guy's job because now he's sort of changed midstream. So if the quarterback is there, take the quarterback. Don't mess around.
Well, I know you're going to be very excited to see it all unfold this week, Russ. As you've mentioned to me off air, that the week-long festivities in Philadelphia leading up to the start of the NFL draft on Thursday night. I know you'll be there for all of it, and people can follow that, of course, at Sportsology.com. As the week goes along. And, of course, our coverage subsequently with the FDHLounge.com and Pro Football Draftology 2017, our guide available on the main page at FantasyDraftHelp.com, the FDHLounge.com, also available at Sportsology. Thank you guys both so much, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 829, a joint episode with Sportsology Radio.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.